Hello, I'm Edgar Papke.
I'm Ken Sagendorf.
Yeah, welcome to the True Alignment Podcast.
Where we talk about all things alignment.
Yeah, and life, and in business, and our lives at home, and our families, and our relationships, in our work.
It's not separate.
Life. No, it's not. We're right at the intersection of everything. That's one of the things that's really kind of nice to think about ourselves as truly the center of our own universe, is that it's true. We're at the intersection of all of our experiences in life, and everything comes through us.
Yeah.
Including sitting here at
Regis University. We're in the True Alignment office in the Innovation Center at the Anderson College of Business and Computing at Regis University here in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, and we've got an addition to that here. In addition to that, we're in a place where a contemplative process is always present.
Yeah.
Jesuit University. At least we... That's what we aspire to have here.
Yeah, that balance. For those of you that don't know the kind of principles of the Jesuit tradition, the Jesuit order was an order of the Catholic Church, and they really were breaking down the barrier between nuns, orders of nuns that really were in constant action, and orders of monks at the time who were cloistered and constantly in prayer. So that concept of contemplative inaction was that you were prayerful while you were doing the work. So you didn't stop. The work mattered. You know, I think that goes right along with our conversation that alignment is not, it's not in one place or the other.
It's
in all of them.
Yeah, it's in constant. It's in constant motion in a way. There's a tendency when we think about alignment in organizations, we see this happening when we do strategy work with organizations all the time. It's kind of like, here's a snapshot of a time and place where everyone walks out of the room saying yes. In that moment, you know, there's an alignment. And can you keep that? Well, the only way to keep it is to keep moving forward and creating action, which verifies the alignment, just like it is in our own lives, in the alignment to who we are. So... here we are, just to remind you all that any and all questions, thoughts, comments, anything at all, info@truealignment.com. And as always, we make a commitment to you to respond as quickly and timely as we can. Yeah. So, yeah, let us hear from you and you'll hear from us.
So, Edgar, we didn't press the record button when we started our conversation about an hour ago.
Yes, that's true.
We probably should have just recorded. We probably could have made Jim make a podcast from it.
Yeah, which is pretty much the way things work around here anyway.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, yeah, interestingly enough, and we started down this path at a topic of conversation, which really stems from this idea of that we're at the intersection of everything in our lives and in the moments that we're either in alignment, and we have that sense of, yeah, this is alignment. And, of course, so much of our journey is seeking that alignment and looking for it in search of alignment. So that's a great topic of conversation that can take us in a lot of different directions. But we started that conversation, so I'm going to bring you back to it now, Ken.
Yeah, let's do it.
This is kind of fun. A letter that you received that you had written to yourself.
Yeah, I was part of a workshop, and I shared with you, Edgar, that I don't remember exactly what the workshop was. I don't remember the context of writing this letter, but part of what you needed to do in the workshop was to write yourself a letter that raised some questions for you and challenged you to continue. You know, and as you mentioned, when we do these strategy sessions and people leave and they have it, that's not the be all end all. They have to work with it. They have to go with it. So seeing this letter show up this week on my office door was, like I said, I opened it. I knew it was my own writing, so I knew it was something I had written to myself. So, I've said this to a couple of people this week. So, you know, part of it when people read it, and I was going to post it to LinkedIn just to share and so people could see it.
Can we hold you to that now?
Yeah, I'm happy to share it. You know, part of it is the idea of how we have that inner dialogue with ourselves.
Constant.
And you know, for me, it's always, I want my kids to see the letter because I want them to see that I talk to myself that way also.
I mean, I'm just hearing you.
And the letter starts with, "Hey, moron." You know, and then promptly goes into asking myself the question of, you know, what are you afraid of?
Hey, moron.
Hey, moron. Afraid of? What are you afraid of?
Powerful. So powerful. That so just a thought that I have around that is that how powerful that process is. So if you want to take away from this podcast, if you're looking for a how-to do kind of deal, here it is. Write yourself that kind of a letter. Write the letter to the world around you as well. You could do that. It's kind of like writing your own, what is it, your own eulogy? Or
yeah, obituary.
Death? Yeah, your own obituary, your own, or a statement of legacy is the way I'd like to, the way I like to look at it is, yeah. You know, what's your desired legacy? Yeah, come into the world with nothing, leave with nothing. Only thing that's left behind is people's perception of their relationship to you. And at the end of the day, that's a way of seeing you for who you are and who you are as a human being. So this idea of writing a letter or writing that obituary for the future is in a way of defining who you want to be. And ultimately, I look at it through the lens of, as I do everything, right? Alignment, which is what does the aligned self look like and how do I bring that into the world? So this is interesting to me. A couple of weeks ago, I was working with a team. And we had about 20 people in the room. And I asked them as an exercise opening up, because so many times in strategy meetings, you begin with, oh, let's make group agreements. And people start talking about respect and listening and all those things. Well, rather than just having that, it was everyone write down just one commitment you're going to make to yourself over these couple of days. How are you going to show up and how are you going to communicate with others? Which, of course, then winds up being listening and the usual suspects show up.
Sure.
The question I wanted to pose to them was, as everyone made it public what their commitment was, and we put them all up, and you could see the themes and threads show up. The question is, okay, if you can do this and you're committing to this for two and a half days, how about a commitment that you look at this as being part of your leadership legacy? That if you were to focus on this one thing that you're going to focus on here for 2.5 days, what would keep you or prevent you from taking that on and making that a part of yourself from this point forward? Would that take?
How many people physically recoiled when you asked that question?
Well, you definitely could see some discomfort in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, this sounds great for now and for this meeting. Well, wait a minute, you're asking me to really, and you could kind of get a sense of that and the power of that. Someone says, how well do I listen with empathy? Mm-hmm. Okay, what does empathy mean? Seeking understanding. If there's a conflict, what's your shared truth? And that we get through listening. So you start peeling away at it, and you discover how powerful it is in all aspects of our lives.
Absolutely.
Including even listening to yourself. Hey, moron.
Hey, moron.
What are you so afraid of?
Well, that oscillation, you know, that's always the one thing that I'm so curious about, Edgar, is that phrase about what am I afraid of and what do I want? You know, I think that is, as someone, I'll just share, I am not sure what I want. What I'm sure of is that I want to be in conversation with others while I'm figuring it out. Like, I do know that part. I mean, and that's why I enjoy this work and the work that we get to do.
I see you in the years now that I've gotten to know you well. That's, there's so much. The idea of a superpower kind of cracks me up to a great extent. Sorry out there if you're, you know, everybody's got to have a superpower. That's a way of defining what am I going to act in alignment to that brings value to the world. It's a great way to see that. So how you bring value to the world, knowing you, is the conversational context. You're absolutely brilliant at the conversation, at the inquiry, at the pause. Even when you're asserting a point of view, I always hear it through the lens of curiosity. And it's not, here's a thought. It's right. It's real. It's kind of like, here's a thought. What do you think? Yeah. And even in the tone that you present it through. So I think that for you is a really great way to look at it and say, okay, what do you really bring to the world? This conversation.
Yeah. I'm an
dialogue.
I knew this about myself, and I'm an idea trawler. Right? I mean, and I don't, I'm going to go visit my best friends on the planet and go fishing here in a couple months and an annual fishing trip with them. And, you know, that's kind of how
I just want to point out, if you're listening here, he said the best friends on the planet. He didn't include me anyway. So anyway.
We're just
purely transactional.
It's so funny because as I talk to people about this trip, they want to know all kinds of details, like, you know, how much we're going to drink and, you know, what parties, you know, how much trouble we're going to rouse. And honestly, if there was ever four old people going fishing, that is us, right? I mean, we get up at 6 a.m. and we go fish for a few hours, come back and have breakfast. Oh. We go fish till after lunch and then we take a nap.
Four old men with their rods. I'll leave that one.
But you know, I think this is me with ideas, is that I don't know. I'm in search of. You know, and I think there is such polarization in the world of who's right and who's wrong and who's got the best ideas and the least ideas. I mean, this is what I've shared about the leadership work as I see it, is that it's not an idea to be wrestled with.
Right.
It's an idea that you're supposed to know and follow. Mm-hmm. That's the majority of the leadership work. That's why I'm so proud of the True Alignment work, which is this conversational, contextualized, moving, alive conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, and I, as you talk about those leaders and you say, what's in the way of having this beyond this 2.5 days as your commitment to how you lead, I think that's the oscillation of life, right? I mean, that the idea that, well, I can be like this for 2 days because I'm away from the day to day.
Yeah. And I think there's also something in it that's very concerning to people doing the, so having a wide open dialogue and a conversation puts a lot of people in business and leaders ill at ease.
Oh my gosh.
Because they're so afraid of what's going to show up. And I think that's part of the work we get to do, is let's look at this through a systems lens, something that we can all learn very quickly, something that's simple, makes sense. And we therefore have a shared framework and a shared terminology. And that, and in a way, it doesn't create constraints on the dialogue. It actually opens it up, because it provides a level of safety to say, look, here's a common framework of language. We can take this conversation wherever you need it to, because somehow we're all going to be aligned on the meaning and where it's going. In some way, we can bring it back, because it's so human in business, because business is human.
Well, you know, you and I were talking a little bit about this for ourselves, which is, you know, we just so enjoy the conversation and we have to get to the action. And so as you talk about leaders being ill at ease with the openness of dialogue, you know, and I hear that they're afraid of having those things come out, because then what?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And for me, I don't know, that's the magical work. Yeah, I have seen so many organizations, like, they don't want to uncover something because they're afraid of what they're going to uncover.
Yeah. We spend a lot of time hiding our shit, don't we?
We do. I mean, I think that's exactly the right way to phrase it.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking back to, you know, a 2-day version we did with an organization, and it got kind of heated, and I texted you and I said, you know, I'm uncomfortable with the tension. Uh-huh. And I'm, as I think about that in hindsight, you know, I'm not uncomfortable with the tension. I'm uncomfortable with that the people are tense, because it doesn't allow us to dig. It doesn't allow us to dig and uncover.
And very often, just like the question you're asking yourself, right?
Yeah.
What are you afraid of? Hey, moron, what are you? Let's take the moron out of it. Let's just clean it up. So what are you afraid of? What's the tension? And so often, and this applies to ourselves, think about it through the lens of all the different levels of alignment. So alignment of self, alignment in my relationships at the interpersonal level, alignment in groups, teams, families, groups, right? And then you start bringing it into the organizational, eventually into the social and global context. And what are all the different forms of alignment and all the different tensions that exist? And very often the simplest question to ask is, where's the tension? What is it? So if there's tension in a set of relationships and makes us uncomfortable, because, yeah, I think in the work that we get to do, you're looking for and advocating a shared understanding of where the fear is and what's getting in the way. And what is the shared understanding of a shared truth? And what does that look like? And the only way to get there is actually to confront it in a constructive way, to say, okay, so let's take a look at where is the tension. And we do know that as human beings, all the great advances and innovations and all the great ideas come out of that space of tension. That goes all the way back, and I remember reading
Peter's. You need tension for a performance, for sure.
Yeah, you know, there's the band, and the tension is there. It's a matter of learning to use it. That's what great art is about. That's what great business is about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the irony, I think that's one thing. I'm not afraid of tense things at work. I'm afraid when the desire is only for it to be rainbows and unicorns, right?
Yeah.
Because that makes people afraid of working where there's tension.
Yeah.
And so they avoid it at all cost.
And I think that's the discomfort when somebody says, I want you to write a letter to yourself. I'd like you to write down your own, eulogy. Take a look at and write down your statement of legacy. A statement of legacy just purely is just simply, this is what I intend. This is who I want to be. This is how I want my relationship to the world to look like and the people in it to look like, right? And you take that. That's begging the question, what are you afraid of?
Yeah.
And to write that down and say, this is who I really want to be, the great fear of course, is that I'm not going to live up to it. I can't align to it somehow. I can't make the choices. And it's interesting in the group that I was working with, I hope I'm not going to be repetitive in our dialogue, is that the question is, well, if you're going to be that way just here, or are you going to carry that forward? And what does that mean? Because in every moment, what you do or say matters. And I think that's so important, not just here. I mean, you could see how some relationships in the room over the couple of days just opened up, some of them closed up because of what people said and did, and the realization that in that moment, what I do or say is going to matter to the relationship, and it matters to your legacy. As to whether you're aligned or not and how you show up. And to make those kind of commitments to yourself, like in a letter to yourself, well, that's powerful stuff because you're doing some confronting of fear. You're doing some confronting of, am I really being truthful here? Is this how I really see myself and who I want to be?
Well, and perhaps I'm going to add more than one movie reference in here as we go through this conversation, because as you just said that, Edgar, that that opening and that closing up and where those fears are. I had just a lightning flash of The Matrix, the movie The Matrix, where Keanu Reeves' character is experiencing the deja vu moment.
Mm-hmm.
And and he has to pause and think about it. And when somebody says, well, this is a glitch in The Matrix, it brings attention to it so he can come back to it. Because I think we think of often about our progress is just solely linear, right? Organizations, I've said this for a long time. What I want organizations is to accept that the growth curve will not always be ever positive and upward at the same steep rate that you want it to be.
And then the hockey stick, the J curve.
In the entrepreneurial space, it drives me crazy. And I remember I said this in a conference one time. And I said, you need to be like the jellyfish. And, a jellyfish, sucks material through it,
right,
to propel itself.
Mm-hmm.
But then it can't be constantly sucking material through it. So it's got to pause, mm-hmm, before it shoots forward again. And I was positing in that conference, wouldn't it be great if businesses thought of themselves to be jellyfish-like? Which isn't just this constant, really fast forward motion, but also the pausing to figure out.
It goes back to and you've mentioned this in the podcast a couple of times, the moments that we see, and then we can actually see alignment in that moment, that snapshot, the moving train.
Yeah.
Where in that moment you look and you can just see something through the window and everything just kind of stands still for a moment, and then boom, there it goes again.
Well, that growth, it starts to become an externality that controls. We were talking about some externalities earlier. There's a collection of things in our worlds that are externalities that are telling us what we're supposed to be doing and how we're supposed to be doing it.
Okay.
that when you put people in a small group and you create this openness in how people show up, you talk about things closing and things opening. Because, you know, there's an expectation. There's an expectation of us personally in all of our personal relationships. There's an expectation of us professionally in those relationships and how organizations interact with their customers and the world around them. You know, and right now, I think there's an ever-increasing amount of externalities that we're all trying to rise to meet, which prevents us. I mean, and I think that's the, I do know one of the things that I'm afraid of is being closed to new conversations and new explorations. Like, I don't want that.
Is it that we move away from that, or we avoid that kind of dialogue, a conversation, of course, is the discomfort of change. And so what is the, is it that we want things to be so predictable?
I mean,
that's one of the great concerns around data.
I don't know that it's data. We want things to be so predictable. It's that there's comfort in knowing, or being able to predict. You know, the one thing that data gives us is it gives us a sense of safety.
And in some sense, a safety of and wanting to predict human behavior. And so much so that we actually remove the emotional, the humanity from it. I think that's the effect of dataism. Our over-reliance is we're becoming more and more reliant on data to the degree that we it's not a straight line, and we forget that it's not going to ever be a straight line.
That's right. I tease my youngest daughter, who's an economics major, and I say, you got to remember that foundationally and fundamentally, economics is based on one thing, humans as rational actors. Right? I mean, and that's the flaw, right? You know, there's been a lot, I think, a lot more present conversation of late of futurists, and futurist thinkers.
It's happening. You think about people, like Larry Fink, and you start thinking about what's going on, and also, you know, our forms of denial and go into it. So if you were to take an inventory of what are some of those external factors or challenges and dangers, right, and you start thinking about who am I as a leader, especially as a business leader, regardless of where I am in it, I've got to also see the bigger picture, and I've got to understand what those forces are. So the list, a short list, right? So there's data and our reliance or the whole idea of dataism and that piece of it.
Yeah, as the amount of data connected to everything grows and grows and grows.
Right? And then there's also this ability to at times just over-rely on technology, which can really get us into trouble. That's where the whole AI trap comes into play. And what's our reliance on AI, and how's that being used? And here comes that, you know, rational. If we were rational, we'd all be using AI for really good constructive means. Somebody's screwing you using AI? Come on.
A flash of movie reference number two is the movie WALL-E. Have you seen this one?
Yes, I have.
All right. So, you know, when they're all, you know, they're all up on the ships, and I just remember it's John Ratzenberger's playing the gentleman who, you know, they're drinking all the diet sodas and they're on their movable lounges and they don't have to do anything for themselves anymore.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and I think that this is the, this is the promise of a utopia,
right,
that I think, you know, our technology and our, you know, the potential for AI, I wonder if we're having a hard time separating the potential for something versus the fringes and where you need to be careful with these things. I just had a giant flash of, I'm going to go all movies all day, of Planet of the Apes, right? I mean, where all of a sudden you can't see.
Yeah.
And, you know, that fantastic scene at the end where they ride their horses up to the torch of the Statue of Liberty.
Right, in the sand.
And you didn't know the entire time
that's where you were. Yeah,
you know,
it's wild.
I think that is the, I mean, we're living in the middle of science fiction right now, with the reliance on the data, with the reliance of technology tools.
Yes. And that's an aspect of it that really gets, in a way, is a really good indicator of that, is that the use of AI in art. And so what really now is art? Because I have technology, and humans created technology that construes the definition of art. And can I actually convey my emotion through the use of artificial intelligence to create the art that I want to create? Gets interesting real fast, doesn't
totally,
it?
Totally, totally.
And what's real and what's not real, and of course all these questions, and then, you know, then we get into that whole conversation of free will and choice, and do I really have choice, or am I programmed to it? And then we're all the way back to true alignment and Edward Bernays and the origin of thinking of the true alignment system, which is all about spin. You know, when you think about the negativity of spin selling, and yet everything that's conveyed in our world, in our business society worldwide,
is
based on the emotional sell.
Yep.
Always has been, always will be.
Yes.
We're just getting, how do we use that? Which really gets interesting.
Yeah. Well, and the idea of competition in all of this too, Edgar. I mean, I think that is the,
that's
the race against each other.
This is big picture stuff too, and to keep this in mind as a leader. So here's another one of those external challenges that real world challenges that we have in a broader perspective, is our desire for dominance. So what is our desire, and you like to call it individual siloing that occurs.
Yeah, self-siloing.
Self-siloing.
I think that's when I first brought up that phrase, I think of it as kind of a protection mechanism. So the idea that if I have some personal alignment stuff and I'm in my professional role and I can't find alignment in the professional role, I can kind of roll up like an armadillo and self-silo so that I can find my alignment even if it's not there in my organization. So
happening to a great degree.
Yes.
You always think about this engagement. You think about everything that's been happening in the great alignment.
Yep.
Is that seeking of where's that personal alignment? And if I don't have that in the context that I find myself in my work, in my organization. Yeah.
Well, it comes back to the legacy conversation too, right? I mean, because if I can't find that personal alignment, and this is the... There's so much coming out. TikToks are alive with the memes about the generations. So what was the one I just saw about how the different generations do a day off?
Uh-huh.
And it was the they just showed a picture of a sleeping Generation Z individual, and then the Generation Y kind of wakes up, looks at the clock, and then rolls over and goes back to bed. The Gen X is like, oh, I'll just check my email. And the boomer was like, this is the first vacation day I've had in 40 years.
Oh, shit. Like,
and those are funny because of there's strings of truth in those.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, that's why we laugh at them. But I think, that call, that weight of responsibility and how we all experience that differently. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of this great alignment. And part of really what we're saying in true alignment, that it is all about you. The universe does revolve around you.
Uh-huh.
And
everything is personal.
Everything is personal.
And
the organization's going to succeed with those individuals. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, and I think that's the, instead of trying to push one out of the way for the other.
Yeah.
It needs to be an inclusive and.
Yeah, it is. So this whole idea then in business, and we realize this, we live in an entangled, interdependent world.
There it is. Quantum alignment.
Quantum alignment.
Yes.
And so we've got all these different forms of alignment occurring in our world. And then you start looking at it through that lens of, well, if I as an individual, if I find myself self-siloing, to what degree does that inform my sense of well-being? So what is a well-being culture in an organization? What does that look like? And what kind of alignment is required to make that happen?
Well, and we would be remiss if we didn't mention that, and you're in a more global society than ever before.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we got a prayer from our...
Forgive us for stating the obvious.
Yeah. I mean, I think, we owe it to our listeners to talk about that, because it's not just the individual and their things at home. It's their, it's not just the individual and their things at work. It's these, the constancy of these, you know, listen, we have two major global wars going on that we are told about. There's many, many more,
right?
But you know, the Russia-Ukraine war, the Israel-Gaza war, you know, we have those things that are coming every day at us. You have you're on the on ramp for political upheaval here in the U.S.
Yeah, and you think about and you come back to that and you say, what are all the forces of dominance desire going on in the world around us? It certainly plays out in organizations. To some degree, it plays out in our in business, in our country, and in business society. And then, of course, you take a look at things and you step back from it and you look at it globally. You go, wow, here's all this dominance stuff going on, and which is the complete other end of the spectrum of collaborative problem solving and figuring out what to do with our conflicts in a much more constructive, positive way. And then you think about, we go out and we teach executive teams and groups to do design thinking work, right? And they discover, oh, yeah, let's have the this exchange of ideas and look what we can create and look at the innovation that we can manifest. And then you say, well, can't we do that? That's a question I get a lot. Just from people overall is, gee, why aren't you working with Congress? Why aren't you doing this work? Right? Why don't you go talk to those folks in the Middle East?
Because it wouldn't be fun.
Well, I give them a simple answer. I haven't been invited yet, right? Yeah. And they're like, well, what are you waiting for? So that's right. Just the idea that of how important it is, again, we're back to this idea. Begin to look at things from a systems vantage point. As an individual, we're part of a system. Self-siloing is a wonderful way of you know, protecting ourselves.
Trying to separate from the system.
And separate from the system opposed to engaging in the system. And, of course, this is a lifelong, you know, democracy conversation that we can have. The reality is things work a lot better when we engage. And when we – and engagement, what's so important about engagement is not to come at it through that sense of the desire for dominance or to be right. It's really – and we're back to things that we've talked about here in the podcast, which is about curiosity and openness and exploration and thinking, just thinking differently about what our role is in the conversation.
Yeah. Well, the ability to be able to observe and ask a curious question and then, you know, the intention for that relationship, which is for me to see you and you to see me, so that we can become the best versions of ourselves, so that we can find that those moments of alignment with the help of each other. You know, I think you have to be asking some of those curious questions and you have to be wondering. I mean, I think that's the thing for me is that I am always wondering about myself, why I am, how I am. And, if I ought to be that and, you know, what do I really want to be? I will, in part of this conversation.
Hey, moron. What are you moron. Of?
Part of this conversation has helped me. You know, I don't want the separation of me from the professional me. I want them to be the same. Right? And that doesn't mean that you.
Yeah. And when you think of business as an art, regardless of what you're doing with it or where you are in it, yeah, is that alignment to who you are and how you want to show up and who you want to be and what part of your life does it represent and, you know, create a fulfillment of. It's powerful stuff.
Yeah.
And then to be open and be receptive as you engage the world. So that's on the list of challenges, and especially at a global level, denial. The defensiveness of denial, the defending of ourselves to the truth and hearing things differently than what we perceive to be, well, it's our truth, right? What we perceive to be right. And that's be open right. to other ways of seeing things or experiencing things.
Yeah.
Experiencing others.
Well, Edgar, you and I have had this conversation. I'm not sure on the podcast, but, you know, as we do some change work and we talk about the difference between change and transition.
Yeah.
Right? Nouns and verbs. I mean, that's how I would boil it down, nouns and verbs. Change, when we talk about change, it's often, it's not this thing, it's that thing. It's a noun.
Right.
And transition is verb-based, right?
It's gotta, well said.
Got to be an exploration. It's got to be asking questions. It's active. It's not a place. It's an action.
Yeah, and I think that's probably one of the things that we, because of that, so change the external, transition the internal, the orientation, right? Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I think sometimes we think of change as a moment that is there and is going to exist, and we know that transition is movement, and change is movement. It actually is.
Yeah.
I think what we like to do, let's create this change. We're not realizing that as soon as you go down that path, you're going to find some other things to think about.
Well, and it just, you know, brings up a whole different conversation of, well, this is the irony. If business wants an ever increasing positive slope, many desire to have a constancy. Right. And I think that's probably one of the greatest false hopes.
It is.
Is the desire for something to remain the same.
Yeah, the only thing that's constancy is the movement of time, right?
Right.
Well, so, okay. Oh, physics, let's not go there.
Right.
So
gravity.
A couple of
it's
hours
not just a good idea. Yeah. It's the law.
Yeah, and then we have these wonderful interpretations of time is moving slow. Time just stopped stand. It just stood still. And we have all these different ways of looking at the constancy of time, which tells us a lot about our experience of life. Slowing things down, speeding things up. And what are we really doing? Trying to get the most of it we can at a time. Now we're into the third element. You see how that works?
Yes, yes.
It's so connected.
Yes, it's not separate.
Yeah.
Always connected.
Same. Love and time and alignment. Yeah. Huh.
Edgar.
How big this idea is of denial and defensiveness. And I was thinking about this too from a leadership perspective, how often you can see, we actually experience this happening, that something doesn't work the way that it's predicted or it's supposed to work. And then the defensiveness that comes with it. So you make a leader makes a decision, or we make a decision, everyone does, and it doesn't play out the way it's supposed to. Then of course we look for the blame, even in self-responsibility. There's a defensiveness to how we make our own decisions and the choices we make. We can find ourselves in that so easily. And you look at the acceleration of that in the complexity of the world, and it feeds itself, and there seems to be this sense of denial that's coming with that, you know, human defensiveness.
Yeah. This is how I don't make friends with my, this is how my family gets angry with me. You know, the ability to take a situation and a result and roll it over and examine it from different perspectives. Right. I mean, and that's where
that's an easier said than done proposition.
Well, people don't often like, right? Because a lot of times you're looking for a commiseration of my perspective. If you roll it over and flip it on its side and you say, well, what if we looked at it from this side and, you know, here's another way to think about the same thing. You know, that defensiveness comes screaming forward. Like, no, my perspective is this.
Right.
You know, it's such an interesting.
Yeah, and it's great to have the conversation with groups around how do you move from the levels of listening, right?
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you how it really is, thanks, right? To let me test this and make sure I'm getting it right, right? Active listening to the place of that fearless exploration, especially when you're defensive or feeling that urge to resist hearing something other than your own thought or idea.
I'm going to share a quick story. I'm going to try and make
you
it
mean
quick.
I'm wrong? Say more about that. No, I'm not wrong.
We had, when I went to grad school in the sciences, there were two things that I really enjoyed. The first was I had to teach people how to write lab reports. And this would drive people in the science, students in the sciences crazy because they were these big, long things and tasks you had to do. But I would always have to help them understand the differences between results and conclusions.
Yes.
Results were merely observations, and you had to work hard to get yourself out of the way of what was actually observed.
Right.
Right. And then I was forced to take this class, and it was one of the best classes that I ever took. Doug Bicklin was the professor. Everybody in the sciences tried as hard as they possibly could to get out of any qualitative research courses. Right? Because, yeah, you know, these are numbers and you want to do all this quantitative stuff.
Oh, yeah, that is 101.
Totally, totally, totally. There's, you know, perceived safety there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, this is the idea that science is bias-free, which is, you know, so false. It's called The Nature of Science, a wonderful book on the nature of science. Yeah. But the qualitative course, and I remember this one night, we watched this activity happen, and Doug Bicklin says, Dr. Bicklin says, what happened there? And it was a trap. It was a trap because we all interpreted what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
And we forgot to observe what happened there.
Right.
And how fast, I mean, that was my lesson, the life lesson that I took, how fast we go away with.
Somebody says, I'm not sure. And you say, gee, you're angry about this.
Exactly.
Well, no, just right? Not sure.
They said, I'm not sure. that's the observation.
And right? The inference. Right.
And you know how fast we move to the why that observation happened. Uh-huh. I mean, being able to really separate those two things, you know, I think that is that's a good part of our work when we work with people in organizations.
I think it's all the time. And I think it's something that leaders, especially when they facilitate their executive teams or groups, I think any leader in any situation, anyone that's in a designated or formal or informal leadership role, in fact, I think the informal leaders that show up are those that are able to ask the questions and to create the dialogue versus being the tellers.
Yeah.
I think that's a really big, vast difference between the two. I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do we work from a place of observation as opposed to just a place of inference? Because the inference is always there.
I'll come back to the title of this podcast, you know, Hey Moron, What Are You Afraid Of? And that's, you know, that's aimed at me. Please don't anybody else think that I'm calling them a moron. It's totally about myself.
That's for those that listened this far into the podcast.
Exactly. But I would ask the... What really are you afraid of? Are you afraid of finding out you don't know something, someone?
Right. You could be wrong.
You could
simply just...
You could be wrong, and therefore your expertise comes into question.
Yeah, your competency. Mm-hmm. Or that, and now we're back to the big three, right? Or that the truth solicits the feeling of not being loved or liked and being rejected belonging. For it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's all there.
Mm. So
what are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of going through life and not having these kinds of conversations, right? I mean, there is the, I roll them over. I draw them out to see what comes back.
Yeah.
So...
It's a wonderful, and then we're back to this idea of having, you know, a systems approach to things, or seeing ourselves within that and seeing our own internal system at play, right? All the different pieces and how they connect.
Complexity.
Uh-huh. And why I respond physically when it's such a deep emotional response, and how do I come to a place of awareness?
Yeah.
And striving and to understand the me. Right. And now we're back to the me and
always. Yes,
and there we are where we started.
Well, maybe that's the simple answer, Edgar, right? I'm afraid of me.
Well, yeah, I think it, I don't remember who it was. I'm trying to think of it. I know that I think it was a poet or someone that said that the greatest fear we have is of our own power. Right. And which, of course, then winds up being that potential shadow side and the critical voice being the shadow side. Our strengths cast along as shadows.
Well, that's a hell of a thing to open up this late in the podcast, too. We got to leave that one alone for now. There's another hour worth of conversation.
Yeah. So with that, that's probably a good moment to make an exit from this one.
Agreed.
Yeah. So let's do that, shall we? And remind everyone that this is the True Alignment Podcast, and any and all questions, thoughts, comments, anything at all are welcome at info@truealignment.com. And we hope that you join us again in the future. And thanks for listening. I'm Edgar Papke.
I'm Ken Sagendorf. Have a great day.
Be well and live aligned.